taking a dig. Where is the bell?
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT is on the air.
I am here because I feel that the right to movement is vital, and that by closing the border, Canada is going against its international obligations to allow people to seek asylum.
This is a decision that's going to lead to death, and it's completely unacceptable. It's completely unnecessary.
Like, I feel that we all need to stand up for the minorities in our society, so we can be like stronger, because unity is strength. We need all to be together for a better future for humanity.
Un statut pour toutes et tous, une dignité pour toutes et tous.
Un statut pour toutes et tous, une dignité pour toutes et tous.
Welcome to Legalese, a broadcast about law cast broadly. Bienvenue à Legalese, une émission consacrée au droit qui vise à en rendre les jargons plus accessibles tout en évaluant de manière critique ces institutions.
Legalese takes place in Georgiage, also known as Montreal. These lands have been stewarded by the Ganyagahaga of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and have served as a meeting place for many First Nations. Legalese seeks to confront the Canadian colonial legal system and to act in solidarity with Indigenous nations, upholding more equitable ways of relating to the land and to each other. I'm Jade.
And I'm Camilla.
And we are your hosts for this month's episode. What you just heard was a protest that took place on March 29th, 2023, organized by Solidarity Across Borders. Many people gathered to protest the devastating announcement by the Canadian government to close Roxham Road. Roxham Road is a small country road about 50 kilometers south of Montreal that intersects the U.S.-Canada border. Since 2002, this road has served as an unofficial border crossing for people who wish to seek asylum in Canada or the U.S. This all changed on March 24th this year, when the federal government suddenly announced that Roxham Road would be closed for asylum seekers coming from the U.S. the very next day at midnight, as a result of the expansion of the Safe Third Country Agreement. This decision has been condemned for being inhumane and forcing people toward extremely dangerous modes of crossing.
To help us unpack this recent and devastating announcement, we sat down with Professor François Repeau from the McGill University Faculty of Law, Hattie Ann, an organizer with Solidarity Across Borders, and who himself crossed Roxham Road in 2018, and Charmaine Khan, an organizer with No One Is Illegal Toronto. Here's our conversation with Professor Repeau. Professor Repeau teaches immigration and refugee law and served as former UN Rapporteur for the Rights of Migrants. This is what he had to say about Roxham Road and the Safe Third Country Agreement.
So the Safe Third Country Agreement is an agreement between Canada and the US, which says that asylum seekers who reach the Canadian border through the US-Canada land border can be returned to the US immediately unless they have family in Canada or other special circumstances, and vice versa. This only applied at official border crossings, and Canada and the US recently agreed to extend it to the whole of the border in order to, as was said, close Roxham Road. Because Roxham Road came out as a place where people wanted to cross, and what Canadian officials did was to organize and officially manage an unofficial border crossing. That was the system, which meant that the people that came from the US to Canada through Roxham Road were crossing irregularly into Canada, but they were not hiding, there was no smuggling. They may have been driven by taxis or buses from whatever departure point in the US, but this was entirely legal to do so. And when they arrived, they crossed irregularly, they were arrested, but they were put into the refugee determination system, which meant that many of them got refugee status. The decision to close Wroxham Road is a purely political one. In order for the government to take away one argument that the opposition might wield with success towards the electorate. The problem we have with migration policies is that they concern people who are not electors. Migrants do not vote, cannot be elected, and migrants rarely, and I'm talking here essentially of migrants without social capital, migrants who live in precarity, so undocumented migrants, or temporary migrant workers. I'm not talking about expats. Migrants often do not participate in public debates, and they're usually not invited to talk about migration policies. Migration policies are made by non-migrants, the politicians, for non-migrants, their electorate. And in that sense, we are in a similar situation as when policies about women were made by committees of men for an electorate of men. They were based on fantasies and myths and fears, which had no relationship to reality. So the decision to close Wroxham Road is an unfortunate one because, as is so often the case, it will push migrants who need to come underground into the hands of people who exploit them. Recruiters, smugglers, employers, moneylenders, etc. Migrants don't want to be undocumented. Migrants want to be documented and live a life in legality where they can, you know, show up to work and not fear being deported. So they came to Wroxham Road. It was a very well-managed mechanism to become legal inside Canada, to have a regular status, even though it was temporary, like being an asylum seeker, but it was a status. And now we are going to not know who goes through the border because smugglers will continue to bring migrants to Canada, will take the place of the state. Since the state does not offer mobility options, other people will. We have to understand that we are facing two needs here. One, some migrants need to leave the U.S., because they will not be recognized as refugees, for example, in the US, but would in Canada. And so they need to come. But we never talk about the fact that we have in Canada hundreds of thousands of employers who are ready to employ migrants in precarity and exploit them, pay them $6 an hour or $12 an hour for the kind of job that Canadians would not accept below $25 an hour. Agriculture, construction, care, hospitality are fields, economic sectors in which migrants make a large part, if not the majority of the workers, because they are exploitable. And so we have a need on this side of the border for them to come. When a minister of immigration tells the Canadian population, I'm going to stop undocumented migration once and for all, we all know this is fantasy because we have a need on one side and a need on the other side. And when we have that and we put a barrier in between, we create smuggling mechanisms. We know that from the Prohibition era. We know that about drug smuggling, 40 years of the war on drugs, and yet there's no dent in consumption, no dent in production. And all that we have succeeded to do is to make the cartels more lethal and more powerful. Because if states do not take over such industries in order to reduce the harm to people, harm reduction policies instead of zero tolerance policies, if we don't do that, other people will do it. Undocumented migration is always a policy-induced activity. If we have relative freedom of movement through borders, which does not mean open borders, but presenting papers, like we had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, there's very little smuggling. So if we want to create smuggling, we just have to prohibit people from coming. Unfortunately, this is what states know they should do. Most countries, including Canada and most European countries, have signed the Global Compact on Migration in 2018, which says exactly that, that states have committed to facilitating mobility, which they're not doing, because they have to please the electorate, and we know how migration is a toxic political issue in most electoral cycles. And at the same time, they have to provide the economy with the arms and brains that migrants are bringing. They navigate political obstacles rather than having a coherent mobility policy that would allow most people to come with security checks, with showing papers. It would be more like what happens in the southern cone of Latin America, where a Uruguayan who wants to move to Argentina can do it and get a work permit and a residence permit easily in order to move to Argentina to find a job. You know, it showing papers, but being allowed in, which was what happened in Canada, in the US, in Europe, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So it's not science fiction.
When we think about the implications of the closure of Roxanne Road or its designation as an official border crossing, how this pushes, you're mentioning this pushes underground networks, maybe even promotes human trafficking to a certain degree, or at least unsafe ways of crossing, who is responsible for these things? Who can be held accountable? And I also want to link back to the fact that the Safe Third Country Agreement right now is being litigated because it was found to be unconstitutional as contrary to Section 7. You know, the charter applies to anybody in Canada. It doesn't just apply to citizens. So we have this kind of unique space where is it the courts? Is it, you know, politicians who are answering to the electorate? And yet everybody in Canada benefits from the contributions of migrants. Who do you think that is responsible for this? How can we mobilize around these questions? Because it's kind of this problem that then no one is answering to.
The problem we have is that the only mobilizable electorate on migration issues is the anti-immigration electorate. This anti-immigration electorate is ideologically convinced that migration is making the country going to the dogs. Erasing the culture, replacing the population, taking our jobs, bringing illnesses, etc., etc. And they're mobilized at electorate, in electoral cycles, to go to vote against a government who has favorable immigration policies. The rest of the electorate, people like me, when I go to vote, I have many issues I want to let the government know I'm not happy with. Healthcare and education for my kids. You know, the environmental policies that I think the state is not pushing, and et cetera, et cetera. Immigration, for someone like me, who is the son of an immigrant but is not an immigrant, is something which is quite far. Well, not me personally, but is quite far from what I live every day. So there is very little mobilizable electorate in favor of migration policies, despite the fact that most Canadians are in favor of migration. But we have this very vocal 10%, I don't know the exact percentage, it's difficult to calculate, that, you know, that 10-15% of the electorate, which is stridently against migration. And many elections are lost or won with less than that. And so this is an electorate which is extremely important, and it changes the game. Many Canadians have migrants in their families, but not necessarily many undocumented migrants, etc. So it's not personal. So that's an issue. Mm-hmm. Who is responsible? As I've said, states, state policies create undocumented migration. Not only that, but they subsidize the smuggling rings. Mm-hmm. And we have not sanctioned the employers who are exploiting migrants, because these employers, they're taxpayers, they're electors, mm-hmm. and they have lobbies. So if you have, on the one side, an exploited migrant population which keeps mum because they don't want to stick their neck out for fear of being arrested, detained, and deported. And on the other side, you have a lobby of employers who are exploiting migrants, but nothing happens. Mm-hmm. We know, for example, that in Europe, there is a European Union directive on sanctions against employers who exploit their workers, migrants or non-migrants. But that directive is mostly unapplied. So states are responsible, entirely responsible. But we cannot blame politicians too much, because electoral incentive is the key to electoral democracy, and that remains the best system we've ever invented to govern ourselves. So unless we provide everyone who's lived 2 years in Canada, whatever their status, with the right to vote, mm-hmm. This is not going to change. We have given most social rights based on residency, not citizenship. The right to vote could be based on residence as well. And it is based on residence for many migrants in, for example, in the southern cone of Latin America. People who've stayed 3 years or 5 years can vote, even though they're not citizens. So it's something which is possible, which would give a political voice to a group of people who are often devoid of political power, and that could change the game. But we are far from this here in Canada. Now, what can we do in the short term is we can raise hell. We can, continue to bring the reality of the lives of migrants to the fore. And certainly good media outlets have picked up on this, interviewing migrants, trying to find, what their, life, the conditions of their life are, etc., and bringing that as information to the people. We need more lawyers working with migrants, winning cases in court, including this Safe Third Agreement litigation. We'll see whether the Supreme Court follows the decisions at that federal court level. So we need to support NGOs so that they bring the lived life of the migrants and their voice, the voice of the migrants, to the debate, so that politicians cannot escape this voice. It's a long-term objective.
We met Hattie M, a spokesperson for Solidarity Across Borders, who crossed Roxham Road himself in 2018 after having lived in the United States for 15 years as an undocumented migrant. Here is what Hattie had to say about why he came to Canada.
Roxham Road for me was a hope, was a better future, and for like migrants like me who fleeing his country because of racism and slavery, and live in the United States 15 years without status, Roxham Road was for me like a heaven. The picture we got in Canada before you get in is like a country of human rights, a country of tolerance, less crime, less racism. When you live in a country and living with stress, depression, anxiety, and you don't, without status, and all the time, you hunting news for migrants, what's going to happen to them, or how they live in other countries, and something like that. When Trump come in power in 2016, everybody knows his speech about migrants, a speech about other people, like his racism and everything he was talking about migrants. At the same time, Trudeau make a tweet saying Canada is a land of hospitality, is a land of he welcome everybody, is a land of migrants. And for us at the time, it was really something very nice from him. We trust in him and believe in him, because a lot of people too was those people who speak French And for them, if they came like to Canada, they got a chance to integrate the society without a problem, because for them, Quebec is a French party of Canada, and they speak French and they know about French culture, and they don't gonna have a problem to integrate society and have a better future in Canada. At the same time, I hear about Roxfam Road. Okay, maybe they call it not regular border, like not regular part of a border who is supposed to cross. Yeah. But for me, it is just rhetoric, because it's the same as a regular part of the border, because you got everything you're supposed to have in a regular border. See? The way I came through Roxfam Road and I asked for asylum.
Hadi is referring to the fact that Roxfam Road used to have status as an unofficial border crossing for asylum seekers. Since a safe third country agreement only applies at official ports of entry, migrants coming into Canada after having landed in the U.S. depended on unofficial border crossings like Roxfam Road to pursue a better quality of life. To be clear, it has never been illegal for migrants to cross at Roxfam Road and seek asylum. In fact, to claim asylum in Canada, you have to be in the country. But because it has been designated as an unofficial crossing, this gives the false perception that crossing it is illegal or lawless or inherently dangerous. It isn't. Hadi explains that much of this difference between what makes a border official or unofficial in practice might actually be a question of semantics that feeds into xenophobic connotations, which politicians can use to promote stricter but inhumane migration policies.
Yeah, because when they said like irregular or illegal entries, like you said, it's just semantic. Because like I said, you got border control in Roxfam. When you cross, they're going to ask you, are you willing to ask for asylum? Say yes. You are registered. They get take your fingerprint. See, they do everything you're supposed to do when you cross what they call a regular part of the border. Like it's the same services you got Roxfam. But politicians, they got all the time their own rhetoric or semantic to talk to other people, because they try all the time to not tell the truth. I give you just example. When Legault talk about migrants and the election, they present them as like violence people or something like that. And he came back 2 days later or a day later saying, no, I'm sorry. It was not right to talk this way. And a couple of days later, you see what the Minister of Immigration of Quebec, what he say about migrants. All the time, they got this semantic to use like populist rhetoric for their interest, but not for the interest of the people. And using all these people as like a crisis or as a problem is not right, because we know today what is the problem in this country. The problem today is climate change. The tribal problem today is the health. If Quebecers don't have a doctor, it's not because of migrants, because migrants anyway, they don't get access to health. Like if a Quebecer don't have a daycare, it's not because of migrants, because anyway, migrants don't have access to daycare. But the problem for me, and for everybody who gonna like tell the truth, for everybody who think about human rights, who don't have a politic idea behind her, like how they thinking, they know Roxfam was really legal, because they know who's there, they know why he's here. He asked for his asylum, and he come through with all services we're supposed to have in a border. That is the right things, but I know when you listen to the TV and like all mainstream media, you don't gonna hear the truth. They got too many specialists and TV gonna tell you, even they never go to Roxfam Road, they never meet migrants, and they don't know why they're here and how they get here. And that is really disappointed. And anyway, that is the politics, that how it works.
Can you share with us a little bit about what was it like, either for you or for other people who you know in this context? What is it like for somebody who, after they have crossed into Canada, for example, using Roxfam Road and claimed asylum, what happens next? Like, what kind of supports do they have? Like, what is their integration look like are, because I also think there's a lot of misconceptions around what supports refugee claimants have when they arrive.
Yeah, I want to say a lot of things, but I got to try to resume everything because I got a lot of things in my mind to say. But you know what is hard for migrants when they get here is the pictures they got in Canada before they get into in this country. Because all agreement about human rights was signed by Canada. And all the time, Canada is the country who, when the minister go out of this country, he talk about human rights. I'm not talking just about migrants or racism or homophobia or xenophobia. They're going to talk about all the time in the speech of the Canadian government when they go out of Canada overseas is human rights, human rights. That's why people like me, who I'm intellectual or I got a level, a big level of high level of studies, but and I know what the meaning of human rights. When I get over here, I see something else. Migrants don't need like help from the government. They need just a safe place to live. They are ready to go to work. They are ready like to do like everything. Some of them, like a lot of them, like who don't speak French when they get here, the first thing they want is going like somewhere to study. But anyway, all those schools they supposed to say like service of francisation was closed. They even don't have nobody on them. All these things they talk about migrants is not the right things. What they want? Look, now I'm telling you, today I talked to someone waiting for his work permit since 7 months. He's young. He speak English, speak French. He got experience in the United States. He wants just to work, but he can't because he don't got his work permit. And now they're going to tell you in the media, okay, we don't have place for this. We don't have it. Like we spend a lot of money. They don't want you to spend the money on them. They want to participate in this economy. And they have like all duties. They got all abilities to participate. When you go to today in all the CHSL days, you got migrants over there since the COVID. Who was there like with the oldest? Who is in the farm? You see, like, I want to just say migrants is our friends, our co-workers, people who live with us every day, our parents. All of us come from somewhere. But, okay, we're going to give all the time a mic to those people who got money, with those people who are doing politics, but we don't give like a mic to the migrants talking about themselves. We don't, no one of them need help, but today they go through a lot of things because I know like some ladies today who live without statues, but even if they get abused, they can't go nowhere talking about it because they're scared of cops, they're scared of government, they're going to hold it there. When they talk about mental health, okay, we need to talk about it, but we got to do with the migrants. Who could take care of them? It's like they're not a human being and we don't have to talk about it. But these people need just like to participate like everybody else, live like everybody else, but they don't need help. They don't need money from government.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need it because they know how to get money. They just want to be treated like us human beings. That's it.
At this point in the conversation, I asked Hadi to talk to us about his reactions to the policy changes at Roxanne Road.
My is really heavy and devastated. The closure of Roxanne Road, the expansion of the legislation to prevent asylum seekers from entering, like it's just forcing migrants to go to the deadly road. Because closure of Roxanne Road can't stop migrant to go seeking like a safe country or a safe place to live. Because these people, why they they run away from their country? I think that is the right question. They run away because of war. They run away from their country because of like climate change. They run away from their country because of some dictator who is in power and helped by the North. Because those dictators, when they come over here, they receive them and with big parties and everything. Who make today a war in Syria, in Libya, in Afghanistan? Who destabilize all these countries? Now, when we come to know why they run away from their country and try to get a safe place to live, what's Canada? Why Canada are signing like agreement with United Nations for and saying every person scared for his life have a right to go to another country and seek for asylum or refugees. These people seek for asylum and refugees. Why they have to close it? Because just of agreement with the United States, like the, what they call a safe third countries. You think if United States was safe for migrants, they're going to cross all United States for coming to Canada? If they don't stay there because they don't feel safe in the United States. And you got all the people who cross like a border from Canada going to the United States. You see what happened to those six people, eight people who died in St. Laurent River, growing. With two kids. All this because of just closing like Rox Farm Road? All this because just of this agreement with third safe countries? And that doesn't stop them. They just want to create, like, they try to make a migrant invisible for their, like, audience, for their people, for their party. And not, but let me tell you this. No matter what they're going to do, they can make migrants invisible. Because their life, their death are matter. And we hold Justin Trudeau and Joe Biden accountable for everything happened to migrants. Reality, they don't think about people. They think just about money. They think just about business. And the closure of Rox Farm Road is really something I can't describe. But I know we're going to have a lot of problems because we're going to hear a lot of bad news about migrants, but still they can stop them because they are the one who destroy all this country where the migrants like run away from it and come see this country who devastated their country.
Mm-hmm. I know that you are involved with Solidarity Across Borders. And I just wanted to give you some space if you want to talk about your work with them or what Solidarity Across Borders is doing right now, mobilizing around the closure of Roxham Road.
Yeah, you know, Solidarity Across Border is my family, really, is not really just for me, is not just a movement for working for migrants, but is really family for migrants, all migrants. Because when I get here in 2018, in May, and I have a chance to meet them in July, since there I work with Solidarity Across the Border. It's just ladies, men who volunteer to work together without money, without pay, but try to do their best to help others. Last year, we met the Minister of Immigration of Canada. We met him in Ottawa, and he promised us a lot of things. Anyway, I don't believe a politician, but he promised us a lot of things about migrants and status for all, and he's going to do his best for fighting for that. But since November 2022, we didn't hear nothing from him. But we're still working on a lot of things. 2 weeks ago, we did the night of migrants and immigration office. And we're working on a lot of other things to do for like a closure of Rocks Farm Road, but to for those who living in Canada without status, and even like asylum seekers or refugees. We need really like people to live together in equality. People live together with dignity, and that is possible. And the real solution today is a status for all. And that is possible, and it's good for this country, it's good for migrants, and it's good for everybody. Because today, if we live in Canada in the 21st century, and we still got slavery in this country, I'm calling slavery. They try to call it modern slavery. No, but it's slavery. Because we got a lot of women who are abusing this country today. We got some migrants who work on a farm and they get abused, sometimes underpay. Yeah, this year we see two documentary. One of them was played by one journalist, two journalists, and some migrants called Essential. The one I did with Radio Canada. And just telling him the situation and showing him the situation. They know about it, but they keep using people as a slave because for them, the most important things is just being rich, and they don't care about rest. And I think this is unacceptable here in Canada. It's not acceptable anyway in the world, but in Canada too, it's really like inimaginable to have this this kind of practice here in Canada. But we got it. We got it here in Canada, and the government know about it.
Hadi here was making reference to the fact that the Canadian economy is largely built on the labor of migrants, most notably agricultural and domestic workers, who despite carrying out essential work which benefits all, have conditions of employment that is often extremely exploitative, because as foreign workers, they come into Canada under closed work permits that tie their ability to be in the country to their current employer. This creates a situation where employers can take advantage of the vulnerability of their workers. By stripping them of political power and creating precarious designations where they lack rights, our immigration system explicitly works to disempower migrants. Abolitionist scholar Ruth Wilson Gilmore explains that capitalism requires the inequality which racism enshrines. This is called racial capitalism. Essentially, those who own the means of production and are accruing capital are different from those whose labor is producing the capital. A recent and relevant example of this would be how Galen Weston, the president of grocery chain Loblaws, was paid over $8 million last year as food retail profits have skyrocketed since the pandemic. Yet, this increase in income has not been seen by store workers themselves, many who are new immigrants to the country, and much less by the migrant agricultural workers whose labor this wealth is being built on, but who are themselves paid well below minimum wage and have no labor protections. The immigration system in Canada fabricates these hierarchies of human value. Classifications such as migrant or refugee symbolize state-regulated relations of difference and state-manufactured conditions of vulnerability. While the rich from wealthy states enjoy borderless mobility as expats, global investors, students going abroad, or tourists, racialized poor people are subjected to discursive and material criminalization and illegalization. In closing, we invited Hadi to let listeners know how they could too support solidarity across borders.
First of all, thank you. Thank you very much, because I really appreciate every time I got someone who need to talk to about migrants and talk to the migrants. And that is the first message I got for your listeners. Before, like, you just read your newspaper or watching the news in TV or radio, you got a chance to meet migrants and know really who is migrants, who is these people. And that is the most important thing, because if you don't know people, you don't have to judge them, or like you're going to have all the time idea, but like maybe you don't have a right idea on them. But today, they got a chance to meet the migrants and talk to them and know really what's going on. Otherwise, I want to tell them to welcome, work with us. Anyway, we are just volunteers. We don't got money, but still... We at least we do a right things, and that is the most important things. Solidarity across the border. You can like contact us in our social media, or like solidarity across the border at gmail.com. Like contact me, contact you guys too if someone wanna really be in touch with us, and we will be glad to meet people and. Try to help us, because it's our society, and we're supposed to live together.
Definitely. The struggle is definitely one that we have to carry together. Thank you so much.
Thank you for everything. Yeah, and I'm really proud to be part of Solidarity Across the Border, working for migrants, and yeah, we're going to continue to fight for this, because for me, this is the right thing to do.
We also spoke with Sharmeen Khan, an organizer with No One Is Illegal Toronto, about Roxham Road's closure, the abolition of borders, and the demands coming from migrant justice organizing. Sharmeen, would you mind introducing yourself to start us off?
Yeah. Hi, Jade. Thanks for inviting me onto your podcast. My name is Sharmeen Khan, and I'm an organizer with No One Is Illegal in Toronto. I've been an organizer with... known as Legal for around over 10 years now, and an active in other social movements in Toronto, other anti-racist and Indigenous solidarity causes in Toronto.
Great, thank you. So what were your thoughts when you heard about the closure of Roxham Road?
Honestly, I was shocked at how quickly it happened. And then to learn that these negotiations have been happening in secret for a year, I guess I just took it for granted that there was Roxham Road. Like, it wasn't like we were satisfied with, you know, people crossing at, you know, non-official ports to make claims, but at least we had that. And so I think I can't speak on behalf of everyone, but I was shocked and also feeling unprepared. As to the implications, and events kind of cascaded, you know, like the there have been deaths for sure with irregular crossings, but it was a shock for this change to happen with like no warning, no kind of discussion, no debate really, and then have the you know, that boat capsized across the river shortly after. So I'm still in shock. I'm still kind of processing. I think we're all kind of, you know, collecting ourselves to figure out a response. There was an emergency rally on Monday, and there will be more, but it's just, I think we're just, I've been feeling in shock and unprepared, and it just feels very arbitrary. Like the manufacturing of anti-immigrant sentiment, of racism, of xenophobia, that I'm used to, that comes up often, but then just to do this like change to the border in such a quick and just like felt like a very bureaucratic way just shows just how inhumane Canada's immigration system is. And just how quickly the Liberals will fold to, you know, racist and xenophobic attacks, while at the same time claiming that refugees are welcome, like Trudeau did a few years ago. So, yeah, I'm feeling very shocked about this development. And just I'm in grief, and I have a lot of anger. And I'm hoping that with this development, more people will get involved with organizing or responding to the situation.
Nicholas DeGenova writes that if there were no borders, there would be no migration, only mobility.
So I was wondering if you could explain more why many people call for the abolition of borders.
Yeah. And I know it's such a hard concept for, it's kind of like when defunding the police came out, people were like, what, how would society work? And I think when you call for the abolition of borders, we're really thinking of a totally different world, right? With a different economic system. So it's not like the abolition of borders would happen within this context, you know, within like tomorrow we have no borders. But it's part of a vision or a goal of a new society where people have, you know, the freedom to move or to stay or to return based on their own self-determination, seeing mobility and freedom to move as, not to use human rights discourse, but like as part of, you know, a part of the tenets of human liberation, you know, and that also means that you're not forced to leave if you don't want to, you know, so, you know, there wouldn't be such high exploitation of poor countries where workers want to leave to richer countries to make a better wage. You know, we're talking about a vision where all communities can provide for themselves, and that their you know, decision to move is, you know, done under their own self-determination rather than desperation. Although, you know, yeah, I don't have any judgments about why people want to leave at all, but that's kind of the vision. And, you know, when people ask me like, well, what does that look like? What does that world look like? I mean, for people who are, who have like, you know, enough income or like, you know, yeah, enough money and the right passport, you already enjoy that freedom to an extent. Like there's still borders you have to contend with for sure. But, you know, when people ask, like, what would it look like to, like, not have borders? I'm like, well, if you basically have, like, a European or Canadian passport and you have the economic means, you basically live, you know, you're able to travel the world without fear of, you know, being imprisoned or being denied. It's still, of course, it can still happen. But people in the North take that for granted, you know, that we have the... just for the means of our passport, we have this like international recognition, and it says nothing about us personally. Like, you know, other border control folks don't know who I am as a person, but because I present with a particular passport, there's a judgment, there's a value to that, and I feel like we need to extend that value of, you know, humanity to everyone. I mean, also borders are meant to really control the movement of workers. And yet we have a capitalist system that prioritizes the, you know, free movement of resources and money, no matter how much damage it does to different communities. So it really makes like, no sense really. It makes sense if you're a capitalist, I guess, and you know, if you have narratives of scarcity. But you know what I think a lot of people don't realize too is that borders are actually a very new concept. You know, even the nation state and its emergence out of Europe, it's not natural. It's not like it's been here for thousands of years, but it's just been a more recent phenomenon. And also, even when we did have borders, the amount of border control and security is very new, right? If you compare mobility and crossing borders in the 70s versus today, we have an increase of not only like bureaucratic measures to control immigration, but also militarization of the borders. Right. So we have even like, I mean, everyone recognizes the wall, but also just the placement of guards, security, surveillance, all that is quite new in the last two decades. And we didn't have these kind of border control measures before. And people might say, well, there's like an increase of movement and migration. I don't know if the stats really prove that, but you can see this whole militarized and also policing network or logics behind border control that's really oppressive and maintains a lot of violence. And the people who are most likely going to die are Black and brown bodies.
Thanks so much. So In terms of steps that we can take already towards, you know, as we work towards a world without borders, without capitalism, could you discuss a little bit more the different demands that are coming from migrant justice organizing that can be implemented now?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the main demands that are winnable still, I mean, are still, I wouldn't say reformist, but are still like demands of like the current colonial state, you know? But it's a demand that would improve, vastly improve the living conditions of folks who don't have status here in Canada. To live without status in Canada is a very precarious existence. There's a lot of support, you know, like people managed to live here for decades without status, but it's one with constant fear of being deported, right? It's the reality. And how do you live your life fully free under that? You know, maybe you'd be afraid to go to a doctor if they found out, so that impacts your life. You know, maybe you'd be afraid to call a fire department, that impacts life. Seek help or seek anything from, you know, any resources. It's a really violent life to put people through. So that's why, you know, regularization or giving people status is our main demand. It's also one that's more, I mean, I think when people think of status, like this kind of campaign, a lot of it is like American focused, which, you know, there's like millions of people without status. In Canada, the number is a lot smaller. We have a smaller population. They're estimating undocumented folks to be like around maybe under 500,000. So it's actually very doable, you know, kind of bureaucratically or administratively to win that campaign, to give status to those who don't have it right now. And then another demand is that for those entering Canada through the Temporary Foreign Worker Program to be given permanent residence. Right now we have different divisions in our status. So you have people who can camp here for years, decades, you know, grow our food or, you know, provide care, and they don't have any steps towards getting status here. So one demand is like PR upon arrival, which does exist for different work. Like if you are, you know, a higher class worker, like an engineer, software engineer, or things like that, those are available. But for the lower income work, which is seen as, I guess, not as valuable, even though it is, because it's growing food and taking care of people, those jobs don't lead to status. So we're saying across the board, having permanent residence upon arrival for workers, you know, if they can, I mean, all those workers also pay taxes here too, right? And pay in, like get deductions like anyone, and yet don't have access to that. And then demands for like, I guess specifically known as legal is we do think that just like, I know maybe this is on the tailcoats of the defunding the police campaign, but we really feel like people need to start confronting and attacking the state institutions that run immigration. So specifically the Canadian Border Services Agency. People often have this narrative of CBSA as being like more benevolent. I mean, it is true that, you know, in terms of like refugee status, America versus Canada, Canada fares a bit better. But people have this kind of illusion that our border services are more benevolent, more kind. People have shared stories of like crossing the border of the United States versus crossing the border of Canada. And but CBSA actually in Canada has like very little oversight. And so a lot of the agents do kind of like, you know, run rogue. With trying to find people to deport, the powers that they're given are just like beyond what we accept of any other, basically, civil servant. But we really look at how much of taxpayer money or public money goes into deporting people, spying on people, surveilling people, and move those monies into more life-giving state institutions, such as refugee and immigrant support, and social services, and healthcare, and education. Our demand is that that we should not have a border agency, and that CBSA should be dissolved. And then finally, the last demand around this is that we need to like get out of the agreement with the United States around the Safe Third Country Agreement. we were kind of, that demand of removing it came up a few years ago around when the Syrian refugee crisis happened. But because people are still able to cross, I don't know, maybe that campaign kind of fizzled. I don't know. Because people who didn't, you know, cross through regular border checkpoints could still enter and claim asylum. But now that agreement is extended across the, you know, 9,000-mile border between Canada and the United States. And basically, if you arrive, you are just sent back where you're either arrested or, you know, sent somewhere. I don't know. There's absolutely, all mechanisms for people to arrive at the official border entry points or not are removed. And so that has meant that people engage in more dangerous, make more dangerous choices for themselves in order to cross, whether it's crossing from US to Canada or Canada to US. And rather than being complacent or blaming individuals for their choices to, you know, cross in like very precarious areas, we need to understand that our borders created that decision for them. Because we, you know, there should be no reason why anyone who shows up at your border claiming for any kind of status can't have the same due diligence as other people. The only reason that we have is anti-immigration sentiment, which has really been fueled a lot by the Premier of Quebec and also the conservative Pierre Poilievre, but I can't pronounce his last name, the conservative leader. There's been a moral panic. But really, I don't know if you're going to talk about the stats in your podcast. In 2022, there are 39,000 refugee claims from the Roxham Road entry, compared to 1.2 million applications for status that Canada received last year. So it's like a very small percentage that, you know, and overall, but there's been a moral panic, right? And people have been blaming immigrants for staying in hotels and taking up social services. The crisis isn't because of immigration or refugees. It's because of a chronic underfunding of these services. But, you know, immigrants and refugees are always the first to be scapegoated. And in this case, this has happened in a very blatant way. And there's actually no chance for people to oppose it, to criticize it, to offer opposition to it. It's just like one day I woke up, and in a few days, this agreement extended across the whole border. And like I said in the beginning, I've just been dumbfounded and shocked that this happened. Unfortunately, the narratives around anti-immigration sentiment are so strong, you know, and they individualize it, or they talk about, those people who pay people to like cross the border, I think their name, the name of that, but they blame everything else except the actual, you know, logic of the border and the security and militarization of the border. And I think there's demands, but I think people really need to start responding to this, because more deaths will come.
Solidarité avec les réfugiés. Solidarité avec les réfugiés. Solidarité avec.
Thank you for listening to this month's episode. Vous écoutez une émission de Legalese sur CKUT 90.3. You can listen to Legalese every second Friday of the month from 11 a.m. to 12 noon on CKUT 90.3 FM. If you have thoughts you'd like to share with Legalese, we encourage you to write to us at legalese@ckut.ca. We will leave you with the song Luna Lovers by Las Capitanas.
My heart met yours, you touched my soul, it's you. Good afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked at the CKT 90.3 FM.